about law. You gets to be God. You gets to be God's deputies. Who's the Most High? Who's the divine authority? It's all about the claim of the Most High. The only way that somebody can be higher than us is if we give away our power. Because there's nobody. We're all equal. But we're not equal in our knowledge. So ultimately, I think it does have to be a hierarchy, but it has to be a cooperative hierarchy, like a bee colony. It's about what our value system is, what we care about.
Universal Hive Mind. Today is November the 3rd, 2025. I'm your host, Nate Kapp, and welcome to the 80th Cubbyhole Podcast, where critical topics are unveiled, discussed, and tested. The website for this show is cubbyhole.com. That's CubbyHole.com. And if you prefer to listen to the show on a different platform, you can also listen with Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon, TuneIn Radio, Pandora, Simplecast, YouTube, Odyssey, X, Minds, BitChute, and much more. If this is your first time listening to the show, welcome to the Cubbyhole. And as I will continue to let all the first timers know, I definitely recommend starting at podcast number one, work your way forward in order, so that way you'll have a bigger picture, better understanding of the overarching message that is delivered and preserved in this whole Cubbyhole podcast. You'll be a lot more equipped to deal with these more advanced episodes when you actually arrive to them. Also, welcome back to all the studiers, all the listeners of the show. I really appreciate all your efforts and all your time. And we have a really, really big follow-up here today dealing with the sacred trace. And we're going to open up the concept known as the Logos. And so we're going to get into what it is and how it functions, where it's found, how far back it really goes, at least to my, limitations in my own work. And we're going to get into how it works with natural law and also the occult language known as green language. And then we're going to move into occult traditions that preserve this concept. And that's the other thing I really want to stress is the Logos has to be understood as a concept. And I'm going to really get into what I mean by this, but just, keep that in mind as you go through this information. Probably, I don't know if I'm going to do a whole show about this Logos. I might have to break it up into multiple shows. So I just want people to really keep that in mind as you go through this or as you listen to this information. And but I'm going to get into these occult traditions that preserve this concept and how it's used. And then I'm going to go back into classical antiquity, dealing with the time period that this Logos was developed, all the way back into ancient Greece and then on up into the Roman Empire. And so once we get through that, then we'll move into a little further back into history, into ancient Eastern religions that preserve this concept. And then we will, it should be no surprise that we're going to also talk about the ancient Egyptian mythos and how this concept is preserved in these different hero cults, being the stellar cult, the lunar cult, and also the solar cult. And then I will get into a symbol that I feel best describes this concept of the Logos, and we will continue from there. But again, I'm going to try to do all of this information in one shot, but depending on how I feel, I probably will trim it up into at least two shows because there's a lot of information and there has to be a lot of explanation to really help people wrap their head around what this concept really represents and just how important it really is, especially when we're really trying to open up Thoth. And so before we go any further, I just want to let people know that there are slides for today's show. So please, if you're not already at cubbyhole.com, please go there. Go to the top where it says episodes 51-100. And so once you click on that, go all the way down to show number 80, and there you will find all the slides for today's show. Okay, it's really important to follow along with the slides because there's a lot of symbols. So that means there's imagery and also definitions that I really want people to pay attention to. And it's going to be a very, very jam-packed show, okay? If not more shows. Obviously, all the shows that are going to come after this are also going to be very jam-packed. But before we move any further, I do have one announcement that I need to make. And also, I'm going to do a very quick recap of show number 79 and then get to the ritual that I've been doing in all of these shows dealing with the third degree and the zodiac. So, real quick, we have a really, really awesome, huge event, online event, taking place next year in February 21st through the 22nd. It's called Ignite Hearts and Minds. And this is Funnel 5, Freedom Under Natural Law 5, which is the event that will spark truth, love, and freedom. And I left a little poster in the slides. So if you go to the slides and go to the end of the slides, you'll find this poster. And I really just, you know, want people to save the slide, screen capture it, however you find a way to take this image and share it with other people, share it online, share it with your friends and family. Get people involved in this conference because this is going to be a really epic conference. There's a lot of amazing minds that are going to be part of this conference, and you can find out all the names of everyone who's going to be there at freedomundernaturallaw.com. And you know, I just want to thank Chris Jansen for inviting me back for a third time now. It's such an honor to be part of these funnel conferences. Leslie Powers and Chris Jansen and Will Keller and Derek Bartolicelli, these guys all do such an amazing job at putting these conferences together and getting everybody together. And I'm really just fortunate to be part of this once again. And I don't know what my title for my presentation is going to be, but I will let everyone know on the website eventually, if not on the next episode or two prior to the conference. But again, it's February 21st and 22nd of 2026. You don't want to miss it. I will leave a link in the description, so please click on the link, share the link, get it out to more people. You know, let's make this event awesome, okay? Now, I'm going to do a real quick recap of show number 79. I'm not going to spend any time explaining anything. I just really want to get through this, all these topics, just to refresh everyone's mind of the last episode and all the other episodes prior to it, okay? All the episodes that are dealing with the third degree, okay? And so we got into the techniques of the modalities of ritual and mimicking. And so the techniques for ritual were repetition, reread over and over again, rite of alignment, opening the vessel, and then we moved into mimicking, which is about embodying the archetype or acting out the archetype and also imitating the exemplar and embodying totems, and also acting out the cosmic cycles. We also got into left foot first, spire ritual, synchronizing, cone symbolism, spire, conspire, Holy Trinity, sacred trace, fetishism, the crescent arch, logos, thoth, imperial measurement, cubit measurement, metric measurement, sign language, pure forms, mythology, eschatology, hero cults, cosmic parents, totemic sociology, animism, rejuvenation, mental material death, spiritual birth, spirit square X, zodiac, the inner journey of the soul, darkness, soil, underworld, Amenta, Sathos, the Duat, the tomb, the womb, death, metamorphosis, natural law, religion, mystery traditions, mystery schools, the little bear, the great year cycle, the stellar, lunar, and solar mythos, Hiram Abiff, Jesus Christ, Osiris, Horus, Set, esoteric Freemasonry, astrotheology, anthropomorphism, preserving, and Athanism, and so much more. So, again, why I do this is because I'm caring enough to carry this information forward to preserve it so that way it keeps us, you know, warmed up for this information. So it keeps it fresh because it's a lot of knowledge. It's a lot of information. It's a lot of words to remember. And so I just really hope that people are strong enough to not let it be too overwhelming. I know it can be, but we have to understand why this is so important to do this. So now, what I want people to do is go, if you're not already, at cubbyhole.com and on the slides. I want people to go to the very first slide, which is the zodiac. Okay. And just remember, when you're dealing with the 12, you're dealing with the 12 greater mysteries. Okay. So the 12 houses of the zodiac are dealing with the 12 greater mysteries. And the 12 greater mysteries is dealing with the solar cult. But that doesn't mean that it's not preserving the lunar and the stellar mythos, because it is. It's just a very advanced form. So what we're trying to do is learn the advanced form and work our way back into pure forms. And so what I want people to understand is when you're looking at this zodiac, this is just to keep you oriented as I go through this ritual. So as I continue to state in these shows, while keeping the zodiac in mind, or looking at the zodiac in this particular orientation, this is where we are drawing out clarity through the sacred art of tracing. So we are symbolically drawing from the chest of the third degree tracing board, from the heart of the third degree tracing board of ancient and modern esoteric craft masonry, which is analogous to the bottom half of this zodiac. But really, the whole zodiac. But we have to remember that the bottom half is the dark lower half. Okay? So we're in the process of remembering pure forms. We're working back from the advanced forms and even the corrupted form back into pure forms. And what we're trying to do is reunite the soul with the spirit of true care in order to be able to cultivate care and rebuild and polish and strengthen the modern pillar of today, which can be looked at as the solar pillar and third degree, being part of this colossal sacred bridge, which is barely connected to the ancient sacred pillar of the past, which you could look at as the stellar pillar. And so what's missing in between them is the crescent arch, the lunar crescent arch symbolically. And what that really represents is care, care for truth. So this is what the Logos is all about. This is why Thoth is so potent in this area of the ritual. And this is where we really deeply learn all about fetishism. Because something is missing. And so what's missing is what the dark ancient psychologists of this world are thriving on, for the fact that most people are so detached from their origins, from their roots. They're so detached from their ancient ancestors, and basically they're just all cut off from their celestial parents as a result. And so these dark-hearted beings, they understand the trace. And so they, over time, have traced out the, very carefully traced out the human psychology and the human origins and the societies of human beings. They've done this for thousands and thousands of years. And therefore, they also understand that human beings are spiritual beings, but spiritual beings that are largely in a condition of apathy. And therefore, they draw their power from this particular condition and this disconnect. And they've been doing this, again, for thousands and thousands of years. And so these dark rulers, they draw their power from this condition and from people's ignorance of their lost connection to the knowledge of the ancient Egyptian mythos, which is where the connection is truly severed. And so these dominators, what they do with this condition, with this severed condition, is they act from the dark mist, from the dark side of the mist, from the blurriness, from the bottom dark realm where most humans are spiritually dormant, where most people are just completely ignorant of this lower dark realm. And this depravity, this evil behavior, is basically, it's right out in the open. It's right on Front Street if people allow themselves to see it. And, you know, anybody can see it by understanding the human condition enough. You know, understanding religion, institutionalized religion enough. Understanding the control structure enough. Understanding the science of natural law enough. Understanding the Great Pyramids and why they were built truly in form, and understanding symbolism enough, because you can't understand the Great Pyramids without understanding symbolism. And therefore, you know, to take it, you know, really all the way home, understanding the evolution of the mythos enough. So when we trace out the playbook of the dark occult, what happens is this is what generates a shield of defense against their methods. And that playbook is nature. It's the sciences that are embedded in nature. They understand it and they're using it, but of course they, you know, twist it to their advantage because they know no one else knows it. They know that nobody cares, and therefore they just completely dominate people's minds with a rudder. And so what has to be widely overcome by the masses, by all of us, is neglect, apathy, laziness, cowardice, and ignorance. Because these are the behaviors that have nearly obliterated the connecting archway back to this ancient sacred pillar. It's largely been abandoned. And this abandonment is the loss of our collective responsibility. So abandonment mustn't be abandoned any longer. We must be responsible for this word, for this symbol, and never abandon it and everything sacred that is associated with it. And what this Cubbyhole podcast is really all about, it's about restoring this sacred, abandoned bridge back to its correct functional form with as much responsibility and accuracy as possible. Because it's about understanding that the better and sturdier this connection is to the source, the more clarity and understanding of our true sovereignty, which will in turn help us get out of this condition of apathy and ignorance and ultimately slavery. And we're doing this as a correspondence in our minds and in our hearts, and then we're willing it into manifestation. So this is a high level of responsibility. And so we have to first understand the condition of apathy. This is where we discover care. And then through ritual, which is what I went over in the last episode, this is where we cultivate care, because it's about repetition, to repetitively cultivate care. And so this means spend time and attention on things that actually have value and matter. And take lots of notes. Do deep dives in really highly valued information. Organize the information. Contemplate on the information. Share the information. Express it. And remember, by expressing the information, this is how we learn it. This is how we refine ourselves. Because it's a refinement process towards evolution and freedom from man's law. So it's our divine conscious connection with nature and our sovereignty. And it's all about our direct lineage back to the ancient adepts of the past, who were the raised elders. These are the learned men and women who made major sacrifices to preserve this beautiful light in stone and in the cosmos and in the mythos and also in other sacred traditions. And so they traced out pure forms and then they passed them on to future generations, which is us. So this is an absolute transmission of agape. So in order to discover these preserved sciences, we are symbolically journeying through the soul receiver of Amenta as a fellow traveler through the trials of the Duat or the underworld, as a means of bridging the gap of this sacred bridge or this trestle through the hidden realm, through the occult, using the maps of the mystery schools that are derived from the mist, which is inspired by the celestial realm, aka the sun, the moon, the stars, and even the planets. So it's about discovering and using the craft, which is the method, and passing through the Duat, the Book of the Dead. This is where our behavior is measured and what we know is measured symbolically, like the degrees of lunar light. So this is the principle of Thoth, or the more ancient Tot. And we are symbolically sowing knowledge in the black soil of Kem, or Kemet, the lower half of this zodiac, the southern half of Earth, in the sacred garden. This whole zodiac is the sacred garden. This is the sacred place of the food for life, and hopefully reaping more truth and more wisdom as a result. So we are filling the grail by demystifying the occult. And so, looking at this zodiac, when thinking of the Logos, think of it symbolically as the whole process of starting in the top materialism realm and then descending down into Amenta, down into the Duat, the underworld, and then aggressing into the material with spirit, to be in the material world with true spiritual light. This is the process of the Logos. You know, just think about everything I've been talking about with the profane and the sacred trace. The profane being the outside and the sacred being the inside. You could look at the top half as the outside and the bottom half as the inside. And the goal is to illuminate both. The goal is to go from the profane self, the outside five senses self, and then going down into the underworld to discover the spirit, to realize that spirit is at the center of all material, to realize that spirit and material are in the same place at the same time. That's what it's really all about, to realize that. And so, if you're looking at the zodiac on in the east, in Aries, this is number one. And then doing a full cycle all the way to Pisces, which is number 12. This is the full cycle, the journey. It's spiritually the journey of discovering the self and being raised in the world by understanding what this all really represents, because it's about connection to nature. It's about connection to seasons. It's about connection to directions. That means orientation. And so you can look at Aries, when you start in life, when you're birthed into this world, you can look at it as the profane, where you start out not knowing anything and you really don't have reverence for anything sacred yet. You really don't have any respect for the sacred, especially in today's world where we are perpetually in these families that don't really care for the sacred because they're perpetually dumbed down. And so we have to relearn this because our ancestors at some point really started to lose control. They became negligent. They became apathetic. They became very careless. And so we have to understand that's the world we're living in now, but we can change that. We can generate care back into our hearts to learn this information, to learn this control system that we're part of, where they are. The controllers, the dominators that run this world, who understand all the workings of the solar cult, They understand how to control people with this information. And therefore, if you can learn the playbook, which is what you're looking at right now, if you can learn it, if you can understand what it really represents, then you can take back control of your garden. Because these people, they are the ones in control of pretty much everybody's garden in the mind. They are the ones who are cultivating in that garden. They are the ones who are planting in that garden and growing whatever they want, whatever they see fit in that garden. And so you have to take back the control of that garden, because that garden is yours. And yes, the earth itself is our garden, but internally, the garden that needs to be controlled with responsibility and accuracy, that is your garden. That is your responsibility. That is where you will find sovereignty. And so, as we become aware of this garden and we start to plant in this garden what really needs to be planted there, then we will see the seeds grow, the fruit that is needed for our true sovereignty. And so this is what the Logos is all about. So please go to the very first slide, which is tracing out the concept of the Logos. And this is actually the second slide. So just make sure you go there. And we're going to learn about the concept of the Logos. And I really just want to stress that word concept, okay? Because a lot of people are just going to fixate on the word Logos, and they're going to miss the importance of what it is synonymous with. What is the importance of the word as a symbol? So the Logos as a concept refers to the use of logic and reason and structured thought in order to explain, persuade, or make sense of the world. It represents the idea that truth and understanding can be reached through rational thinking and also evidence. So this is all about deep pattern recognition and common sense. Everything I just read describes the Logos in its most basic structure. But the point is that if you take away the word and just focus on the explanation, then the explanation is the concept that can be applied to other words and other labels and terms and ideas or archetypes or, you know, names. So it's about recognizing the synonymous essence and paying attention to the associations and the derivations and the explanations of a word like Logos in order to really understand it conceptually. This is how we can, you know, pan out and see the bigger picture and all the connections to this word as a concept, because seeing the concept, understanding the concept, is what helps us be able to transcend the limitations of the language and the words. It's what generates eclecticism, which means growth, which means understanding. And really, that's the point of the Logos as a concept. Concept really means the same thing, but with multiple names. And the names aren't, you know, purely synonymous, but they reflect different angles of the same idea. So now we're going to go to the third slide. So the Logos is the sacred. Think about that for a second. The Logos is the sacred. Okay, this is really important to what I've been talking about with the sacred trace. So the Logos is the sacred made legible through its traces. So this means that the Logos is present in all things that are divine. And, you know, like the truth, the ultimate truth, it's really not something that can ever be truly understood or, you know, completely known. But it is something that can be observed as the intelligent expression of spirit, which is something that we can discover and align to through certain traces, sacred traces. And so this means that it's something that can be read and understood through these certain traces like signs, symbols, patterns, sacred geometry, gestures, dances, rituals, and myths, and so on. These are, you know, many of the traces where we can derive this Logos. And so we can do this through the act of tracing out the sacred, like the modalities that I've been talking about, where we're able to, you know, consciously reconnect to nature and also source. That's what the Logos is, and that's what it's about. So down at the bottom, it says, to trace the Logos is to remember thyself, the higher self, which really is itself the Logos. So it's a process, it's a whole process, a whole lifelong process of remembering as a means of connection to the source. It's about evolution. So we're going to go to the next slide, which is the fourth slide, tracing out the Logos. So, tracing out the Logos is to consciously participate with the divine structures that are encoded in reality. And so, what are these divine structures? Well, we have signs, symbols, patterns, geometry, gestures, dances, rituals, myths, and so on. Not merely to observe it, but to walk it through ritual. You know, constantly refining it, rereading it over and over and over until you really get it, until it sticks. And then, you know, putting the gnosis into action. This is all about repetition towards clarity. That's what it means to walk it. And then to mimic it is tracing out the sacred geometry and myth and animals, you know, their forms, their behaviors. Same with the science of the celestial cycles. And then to sync with it is to harmonize with natural law through reason and ultimately emulating it by speaking the truth, by being honest, which is where real evolution is really taking place. So to trace the Logos is to actualize thyself. So it's all about actualizing the Logos, which is about bringing these sacred divine structures into a lived experience. It's about gnosis, having a deep understanding of truth through these divine structures and the experience of discovering and learning and speaking about these structures. It's about aligning to them. So now we're going to get into the next slide, which is the fifth slide, which is the Logos as the governing dynamic of natural law. So the cosmos is structured by an intelligible principle being the Logos, and through which all things find their pure form and purpose. And this means for humans, this means becoming self-actualized through myths and archetypes and symbols. So this is about mimicry. And as rational beings, beings of reason, we humans share in this Logos and thus possess the capacity to recognize, become conscious, and align with the natural order. This alignment through reason and right action is what natural law calls us to do, because this is how we learn our lessons in reality. That's why it calls us. It calls us to learn what truly violates others' rights or what harms others, and to learn that there is a reason for consequences in nature, aka karma. That reason is the Logos. So living in accordance with this order consists of aligning with truth and living morally, which cultivates true freedom. And so this means, you know, being a truly good person, which is, you know, someone who seeks truth and practices moral principles, someone who cares enough to spiritually and physically resist man's law, socialism, you know, all forms of egoic control. And this is what will cultivate freedom in the world. Order is the structure of the cosmos, which is this intelligible principle being the Logos. Natural law is our rational participation in that order. Natural law is our it's our logical reasoning in the way that we participate in this order, because humans have the capacity to reason and understand the difference between right behavior and wrong behavior and live according to that order, or, you know, to that design. And also the continual unfolding of our understanding of natural law is also what sharpens and deepens our self-awareness, especially when we're being guided by sacred knowledge that we derive from these mystery schools. And what this does is it cultivates the inner sacred vision of the Logos like a goal or a target. And this is what illuminates the structure of the Logos, of creation. And you can look at it as our way of consciously navigating creation. So in this regard, the most important part of the Logos truly is that it allows us to know the dynamics and the sciences of natural law through reason, and logic. And this means it also grants us the access to consciously navigate creation as a sort of built-in blueprint, which is learned through cosmic cycles and also death and birth, rebirth, or orientation, and understanding the difference between dark and light. And so logic and pattern recognition, in this case, this is what helps us have the ability to learn and understand this logos, this creation, and how to operate within it. And so the science of natural law is absolutely necessary to this alignment process and this discovery, this whole development. And so you could say that the logos is the architect and natural law is the moral blueprint that is it's built into that cosmic architecture of the logos. And also, the hermetic principles are really important to this whole equation as well, because they are the structure that the logos is essentially manifesting reality through. So the logos is what the all speaks through. This is why mentalism is the first principle. All of reality is structured by the logos through the seven hermetic principles, and also even the eighth principle. And this is how natural law can be measured. This is how natural law is understood and aligned to. So the all speaks through the logos. And the logos, what it does is it basically structures reality through these principles. And natural law reflects this into the human soul because of reason. This is how we are able to understand and align to natural law. Now, before we go into the next slide, I just want to make mention of something that I find to be very, very helpful and very important, because if we want to further understand the logos and natural law and how they work together, it's really important to understand that Thoth and Maat, these Egyptian gods or Netchers, we have to understand how they are conceptualized as the logos and natural law. So Thoth represents or is associated with the logos, which means that Thoth also represents reason and speech and wisdom and cosmic order. And Thoth symbolically expresses himself through the hermetic principles. That's why he's associated with the Emerald Tablet, which is associated with the hermetic principles. And Maat is associated with morality and natural law, being, you know, the balance of the universe, and also harmony and truth and justice. She's also associated with that which is right or correct, or that which is straight. That's actually what Maat translates to, which is that which is straight. And so the Egyptian Netcher Thoth makes Maat knowable through wisdom and speech and reason, especially reason. So the powers of Maat can't exist without Thoth. And the powers of Thoth are meaningless without Maat's powers. or forces of nature. So this is why, as principles, they are eternally in concert with each other. They're unified. And so that being said, Thoth is the measurement system, which is the principle that allows those attributes of Ma'at to operate through. So Thoth is equivalent to the Logos, or cosmic law, and Ma'at is equivalent to natural law. So, you know, to really simplify it, you could say Thoth is the reason and speech that Ma'at operates through. So really think about that. And really, natural law or universal law really encapsulates all of this. It just goes unsaid that reason is what is needed in order to understand and align to natural law. But in order to understand what reason really is, this is what helps us understand the reason for all of this. That's the beauty of the sacred trace, because the sacred trace is using these archetypes, these forces of nature, these aspects of the self and nature to help us understand ourselves here and now and what we're really going through. And so that's why it's important to see how they work together, but to also see them as one. Because, again, like I said earlier, you could just say Ma'at is the cosmic law, which means the Logos and natural law. But you can't understand natural law or cosmic law without understanding the aspect of Thoth, which is reason. So it's about understanding the two in order to understand the one. So hopefully that makes sense, and we are going to move on to the sixth slide. I believe it's the sixth slide. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yep. So now we are going to get into the etymology of the word logos. The Greek noun logos means word. And this word comes from the Greek verb lego, which means to speak, to say, to gather. And, you know, when you think of, and, you know, there's no coincidence. Obviously, anybody who really thinks about it and contemplates on the word Lego and think of the toys, Legos, you can really see what that really represents. I'll let you figure that out. But I just wanted to make mention, there's no coincidence why Legos are called Legos when you associate it with the Logos. But Lego shares the same root as the word relegere, which means to gather. So Lego is, it means to gather. So what are you gathering? Well, relegere, as I talked about before, which is the etymology of, it's the other Latin etymology of religion, which means to reread or to go back over. And that's really, really important as the ritual of understanding. It's a learning process. And so in this case, to gather means to gather an understanding. So the logos and relegere mean to gather an understanding, truly, And so religion, in the sense of binding as religare, this is the process of where all the sacred doctrine is reconciled. This would be the ultimate use of the VSL, which is the volume of sacred law. And so that's also part of understanding the logos, the word. Okay, so I'm going to go a lot further into this as I go through this information. But, and also we have the other meanings, which I've already gone over: speech, reason, cosmic law, cosmic order. Very important to understand these meanings when it comes to the logos. So at the bottom it says, God, not man, is the logos. God is the logos. The author, who is the creator of law. Humanity's responsibility is to trace God's word, which is truth, and to align its behavior to God's law, which is natural law. So this is an alignment process. Each one of us has the ability spiritually to align our perception and behavior to the logos, to God's law, natural law. And we can become conscious of this by tracing out truth, by seeking out truth. So it's a discovery process. It's a process of, you know, extreme tenacity and willpower to really align and understand, to gather an understanding of the word, logos, the concept. Okay? So now we're going to go to the next slide, which is tracing out the logos with the word theology. And also we're going to get into spirit, soul, and matter. So to trace the logos means to follow the thread of divine intelligence as it expresses itself in creation. So when we find Osiris at the center of the square in the X, in the fifth point raised, this is about truly discovering the thread of divine intelligence that we can find at the center of all that is divine. And so the term theology, I think a lot of people listening to this probably are already familiar with this term, but it's just really important to understand it with this concept of the logos. So the term theology comes from the Greek theos, meaning God, which is combined with the word logos, which means reason or word, which refers to reasoned discourse or study about God, the sacred. And, you know, also just keep in mind that, you know, like I said earlier, logos means logic. So if we're being honest about how we search for truth and become logical in our journey, then if we align ourselves honestly and properly, we can learn about God by learning through the logos, by learning through the word, by learning through the logos and living the logos. So it's about reasoning our way through reality to truth. This is what learning the sacred is all about. So now we're going to move over to the right, dealing with spirit, soul, and matter, and in that order. And so as you can see on the left of the box, you see the arrow pointing down. What I want people to really understand is, well, first, we have to remember that when we are in search for truth, we have to remember to leave no stone left unturned. And how that translates into what I've been talking about with Osiris is that Osiris starts out holy as the holy divine light that is shattered into 14 pieces. And we are to exhaust those 14 pieces back together into its holy form, into its pure form. That's the goal. That's the symbolic goal. And so the same applies to spirit, soul, and matter. We need to remember that these aspects of the self are truly what has been observed and studied for eons. It is something that any true student of the mysteries and of truth is going to learn about these three particular aspects of self. They're going to exhaust them for their whole life. And so it is extremely important to understand them in this order and also in this orientation. So spirit is essentially the nous, and this is a Hermetic word that means the divine mind at its highest level, or the mind of God. And so this is part of understanding mentalism, the all is mind. This is about divine intellect or essence. This is the Logos as pure principle. But the Logos is not spirit itself. Okay, I just want to make that very clear. It's just the pure principle. And the soul is associated with the psyche, which is it's the living mediation. It's the living bridge or the vessel between spirit and matter. This is where the soul is. It's built. It's shaped through the Logos. The Logos is what shapes the soul. It shapes identity. It defines the self. It sharpens the self. And the way that it does this is through its traces, like I talked about earlier with the symbols and the patterns and rituals and myths and so on. And then the matter, this is the manifested world, the body. So this is the Logos as form in the embodiment. It is the spirit made flesh or manifested to flesh. And so, you know, just remember that none of these aspects are separate. They just have to be understood separately in order to understand them together as one force, as one form. But we have to understand that matter can't truly be animated without the soul or spirit. And that also means that spirit can't really express itself without soul and matter. So it's really important to understand them separately and also together. Now we're going to move to the next slide, which is tracing out the Logos through the occult language that I have talked about many times, which is green language. And this is really, really important to pay attention to this. And, you know, what better way to deal with the Logos than to observe it through the lens of green language? Because there are many layers or levels to this language that can really hone in on the depth of this concept, because we're dealing with the word. The Logos is the word. And because we're dealing with green, it's dealing with the middle frequency in nature, the visible nature. The visible spectrum of color, when you look at this visible spectrum, you'll notice that green is the middle frequency. And so this corresponds to the chakra system, the Vedic chakra system, which is dealing with the Anahata heart chakra, which is right in the middle of the seven chakra system. It's right at the center. And heart is associated with care. And care is the frequency that is needed at the center to evolve, to grow, to synchronize, to harmonize. And also something that I forgot to mention is that, you know, when we're dealing with the visible spectrum of light, this is a metric measurement. So this is part of the metric measurement system. So this ties into left foot first, because it's about the measurement system based off the foot, based off of inches. So this measurement system is dealing with Thoth. And Thoth, we have to remember that Thoth is dealing with speech. So think of green language as symbolic green speech. It's the central speech. It's the nature speech. It's the nature force speech. And so this is also part of understanding moral alignment, to speak morally, to speak honestly. That's green. That's a green frequency. That is the positive green frequency, to speak in alignment with natural law, to speak and to be conscious of what you are saying or what others are saying, and to see the deeper aspects that are hidden in plain sight within the phonetic of the language. This is where we find the green speech. And Thoth, you know, we have to remember Thoth is associated with the Emerald Tablet. Emerald is green. And so also think of dot in the center of a circle or the center of a square. It's right in the middle. So when we're talking about the center or the middle, we're talking about green. You know, just think of Osiris. Raised is a green color, especially anthropomorphized in the solar cult. So remember that he is green, raised as the center fifth point of the pyramid. And therefore, you know, since we're talking about Osiris in the center of the square, this is also dealing with animism, the animistic component, because the spirit is animating the material. And so everything speaks, everything divine, everything sacred speaks from the center. And animism is about understanding that nature is intelligence. And green language is what allows this intelligence to be able to be translated through symbols or through language, because language is made of symbols. So we have these levels of meaning that we see on the left, which is the literal meaning of a word, the allegorical meaning of a word, the moral meaning of the word, and the phonetic pun-based meaning of the word. And to the right, we see the definitions of those levels and how they operate through green language. So we have the literal way of seeing a word, which is what is obvious about the word. the Logos speaks through nature and direct observation, making it simple to see or comprehend right away. So this is dealing with the exoteric. So what's obvious on the surface, what anyone can see right away, like the word sun. Sun has its literal associations like bright light in the day sky or warmth. And these are what is easily traceable, these definitions. These are easily traceable, but these traces may conceal so much more, and they do. And what the Logos does is it codes truth into the literal patterns of speech and, you know, really all of nature. So this is what I talked about with the symbol of the X as a symbolic meaning of exoteric. So you have the X as an image, which is the obvious form, like what can be seen with the five senses. But when we dig deeper, more will be revealed to us. So it's just like looking at a box. The box is the vehicle. It's the exoteric. And inside is what is hidden, what is concealed. The tenor is concealed. And what our goal is to understand that the box represents the X. And what is inside also represents the X, because it is what is concealed within the X, the exoteric. So this brings me to the allegorical level of green language, which is it is a symbolic storytelling of a word. It is a symbolic mode of communication in which outer forms, such as stories, images, or language, conceal deeper, often spiritual truths. The Logos teaches through these symbolic layers, and green language reveals and unfolds these spiritual truths through encoded meaning. So it's about what I just talked about with the vehicle and the tenor. The vehicle is the outer form, and the tenor is the encoded meaning that the Logos is teaching through. So for instance, the myth of Horus is the outer form that conceals, it's the exoteric that conceals the science of the sun cycles, the solar cycles. So his archetypal myth or story is preserving the meaning or importance of the sciences that they preserve. You see? And so, you know, also think of the word hours. Horus is the hours of the day. So Horus is symbolically the sun, because the hours of the day is dealing with the 12 or also the 24. So participating in this myth and the science is all about the purpose of the Logos. That's what the sacred trace is, to trace out the Logos through green language, to participate in its unfoldment. So as you're learning about Horus and the hours and the annual cycle and, you know, all the months, the 12, what you're really doing is you're participating in the myth. You're learning about the myth by participating in the myth. And so that's what the purpose of the Logos is all about. So Now we're going to go down to the moral level of green language, which is about conveying lessons that are encoded within words, which is about messages that speak to the soul's alignment with truth. Through this, the Logos guides the conscience, unveiling truth through inner revelation. So, you know, to have that moment of sudden realization of something that was hidden or concealed, and it is now, as a result, revealed, and things make a lot more sense. And in this case, they make a lot more sense because the activated conscience makes it click. It allows the message to be quickly available to understand. So it's an instant conscious revelation because the conscience is activated. It's conscious. This is why being equipped with moral science is so key to this language. So now we're going to go down to the level of phonetic pun-based green language, which is about word play and hidden meaning in the sound of a word. The Logos reveals through sound, vibration, and also double meaning. It communicates this way. So, for instance, like the word hear, what do we hear phonetically in this word? And what word here am I talking about? Am I talking about the word as in, you know, hearing, listening? Or am I talking about the word here as in, you know, a location, being present? And the point is, with green language, is recognizing how these words as a double meaning is reconciled. And, you know, because the truth is that when you listen, this means being present. So that means, you know, being here. It means both. To listen is to be present. So this is how the word hear, H-E-A-R, is reconciled with H-E-R-E. But they phonetically sound the same, but they also both mean two different things. So that's one way to understand it. And also, when we think of this word hear and what it's really tied to, because being present is also about understanding heart-based intelligence, because it's about being here and now. It's about listening with the heart. So, you know, I've talked about this before, this word heart, but I want to go a little deeper into it, because what I want people to understand is that when we're listening with the heart, we're listening for the word. We're listening for the Logos. And so, when we look at this word heart, H-E-A-R-T, it has, right in the center, it has the word ear. So ear is what we listen with. So we listen by hearing. So the first four letters of the word heart is hear. The middle is ear. So we hear with the ear of our heart. So what does the T represent then at the end? Well, that's a cross. Where's the cross? Where is that represented? On the body. Right in the center, the heart. The heart is in the middle. So what did I say earlier about the Anahata heart chakra? It's a green frequency of the Vedic chakra system. So to listen with the heart is a green frequency. It's all in that word, heart. Right in the middle is the ear to hear with the heart. And so now also there is the word son. So phonetically you have son, S-O-N, and son, S-U-N. Two completely different things, but how do we reconcile the son and the son? So son is, S-O-N is the masculine child, and you can also look at the S-O-N spiritually or symbolically. The S-O-N is the divine child, because the divine child is always going to be an action principle, which is male. So that's why we associate the S-U-N with the son as the son of God. So S-U-N, the sun, is, you know, the big ball of light and fire and warmth. And this is reconciled with S-O-N because, remember, sun is at the center of the solar system. And S-O-N is the center of the marriage between mother and father. So they're both active principles, and they both are the light of the world, the rising light. That's how they're reconciled. And also, when you think of the word soul and soul, they both phonetically sound the same. S-O-L, which is the Latin word for son, and then the word for, you know, the human soul, S-O-U-L. This is about understanding the fire in the middle, because the soul, the sun, is, again, it's at the center of the solar system. It's at the center between all the planets that rotate around the sun. And so the soul is at the center of the body, between, it's the intermediary between the spirit and the body. And so the soul, the human soul, is what we can learn about through the sun, the S-O-L, soul. Because as we study the sun and study the seasons and study the cycles, we start to learn about our soul. This is what eschatology is all about. It's about the journey of the soul through the duat, the trials, the underworld. And so as we learn the soul, we learn the soul. This is how they're reconciled. And so we just have to understand that green language is about the power of perception, to perceive these aspects of reality, to perceive these words, become conscious of these words and how they reflect back into us. So it's about becoming conscious of words and symbols and moral revelations and how they all deeply connect and reveal hidden meaning, hidden divine meaning. And so green language is basically the altar of phonetics. It's the central frequency of sacred translation. And so is the language of the birds. You know, the bird is the word. From the mouth to the ear is the bridge of, you know, the bird in flight. And that is really what the Logos is all about. And so now we're going to go to the next slide. And we're going to trace out the concept of the Logos through these occult traditions: King Arthur, Kabbalah, Hermeticism, runes, and Thelema. And I want to be very, very clear how important it is to understand that I'm going to cover the concept, because some of these traditions explicitly use the word logos, and most of these traditions implicitly use this word. So it is just, you know, really important to understand that not all of these traditions use the word logos. But the ones that don't use the word logos absolutely suggest the word or the concept. And the concept is what is really important here, because the concept is what really ties all of these traditions together. And I also want to be very clear that, just like I stated before, when it comes to these occult traditions, I am definitely no expert on all of these traditions. I do study some of them more than others. And, you know, I really appreciate all these occult traditions. I've had a lot revealed to me personally, and I'm very thankful that people have, you know, cared enough to develop these traditions as a way of preserving these really deep spiritual truths that are encoded into them. And, you know, the logos as a concept is what ties all these traditions together at the center. And that's what I care about. So I did really deep research into all these traditions and, you know, many other traditions that are not listed on here. And I really understand what it represents at the heart of all these occult traditions at a very high degree. I'm not saying I fully understand the whole grandeur of this concept, but I understand it at a very deep enough level to understand how important it really is. And it's really amazing. It's very powerful. It's really important. It's very critical. And I just, you know, I want to share some of my symbolic and allegorical breakdowns and thoughts on how this logos works, how it's preserved in these traditions. So I'm going to start with King Arthur and then work my way down. Okay, so the function of the logos when it comes to King Arthur is that the logos in the Arthurian myth acts like the grail, which is the bridge between the divine realm and the earthly one. So this is about tracing the soul's journey back to the Holy Grail. And the Holy Grail is akin to the divine logos, the manifested logos. And this is also being the end goal, which is, you could say, true freedom. So this is exactly what I mean by filling the grail by demystifying the occult, to clear the mist in order to see the light, to, you know, gain clarity. And so, you know, that being said, when it comes to the King Arthur legend, there's a lot that can be said regarding the logos, even though the logos is not really the word that's used in this myth. But the logos, if we pay attention to the concept, one of the ways it can be understood is it definitely is the wizard character in this myth, which is Merlin. And also it is the round table, the round table with the 12 knights being analogous to the zodiacal houses, which is corresponding to the cosmic order. So what is the cosmic order? What did I talk about earlier? It's the logos. The logos is the cosmic law, the cosmic order. It is creation. And so Merlin is the maker of the round table. And really, he's the gifter of the round table. But this means he's the architect of the cosmic order. So he's the creative aspect of the logos. And this means he's the, you could say, he's the mediator or the bridge between the spirit realm and the physical realm. That's what the round table and the zodiac are symbolically all about. And the Logos can also be looked at as King Arthur, as in the embodiment of King Arthur. And this means understanding that he is the solar king, which means he is the sun. He's the sun in all the phases of the sun. So this means spiritually, it's about Arthur transforming from an apprentice or a squire to being fully realized as the king, which is the light, which is truth. So think about what I said earlier with the spirit and the soul and the matter, because it's about the whole process of spirit, soul, and matter, the unmanifest to the manifest. So Arthur becoming fully realized as King Arthur. Okay, that's really what it's about. Okay, that is, it's about going from the profane to the sacred. That's the sacred trace of this archetype. That's the point of the Logos. And that's what each one of us has to remember about ourselves. It's about the self becoming raised and realized and sovereign and not ruled and manipulated by, you know, someone else or anyone else. So then, you know, think about the Excalibur, the sword. And the Excalibur is a symbol in and of itself, because the Excalibur is what we call this sword. So we have to understand that Excalibur and the sword are really one and the same, but we have to understand Excalibur separate from the sword. And this is crucial to understanding the Logos, because X, EX, is akin to X. So EX, always think of EX as the X symbol. And the X symbol, when you understand the center point, the fifth point, this is spirit. This is eternity. And, you know, when it comes to the Excalibur sword, we have to understand that it represents eternity and also time. Because X, again, it represents spirit and eternity. And then the sword or cross, because the sword is the cross, represents time. Because time is what allows the soul and matter the ability to grow and also to erode. And so the spirit as eternity is what gives matter meaning. It's what makes it matter. And so it's symbolically the manifested archetypal symbol of time. And this means this is where they meet. That is the Logos. And also, you know, just think about this, you know, when we're talking about King Arthur pulling the sword from the stone, this is also really important too, because the sword itself is preserving the word. It is the S word. So the letter S and then the word. And when we think of the letter S in its, you know, primordial, you know, zoo-type form, it is symbolizing the snake. And also it preserves the sound of the snake because it's the S. And you have to lift that snake upward, upward in the talons of the bird being the spirit. The bird is the spirit. The bird is what picks the snake up and lifts the snake up, upward. And so when King Arthur is pulling the sword from the stone, that's what that represents. It's about pulling the sword upward from the downward to the upward. So pulling the sword, the S word, from matter, from mother, from the lady of the lake, and pulling it upward. So this is the spirit raised. So now we're going to go to the next occult tradition, which is Kabbalah. And as you can see, the right beside the word, you can see the stars, which mean that they don't use the term logos. So the only one that's using the term is Hermeticism. And there's other occult traditions that use them, but I just really wanted to stress these in particular because these are the ones that I have been researching more, and also because the way that the logos is expressed is very interesting and very unique, and I just want to show how they're all basically saying the same thing, but in different expressions. And it's also about understanding how each expression is very advanced, but also by learning the advanced, you start to understand and appreciate the more simplified, pure form. And so when we're looking at Kabbalah, we are dealing with what's known as the Shin, S-H-I-N. And this means tooth or teeth. And so this means speech on fire, which is the logos as the divine speech that descends into the world and transforms it from within. So this is dealing with the middle pillar, which is central. It is the central pillar that is overlaid with the tree of life. And, you know, there's a lot more that can be said about the logos with the tree of life, but I'm not going to get into that. But the shin or sheen is really important when it comes to understanding that it is a traceable bridge between spirit and matter, between form and fire, and speech and silence. And so the middle pillar is very important because it represents the soul. It represents, this is the light pillar. And the sheen it's a Hebrew symbol, which means tooth or teeth. And it's really important to understand the word tooth. But teeth, when it comes to teeth, teeth are the only bones of the human anatomy that are exposed. Okay, in living form, obviously. And they are used with our mouth when we speak. So this means that, you know, when we think about all our bones in our body, they're all hidden, they're all occulted, except for our teeth when we speak, which means that the teeth bones become visible during speech. They're no longer hidden, and everything that is associated with the speech is no longer hidden. And that's really important to understand. So also the teeth, we have to remember that it is something that we chew with. It's something that breaks down food. It's something that our teeth are what process food. And so think about that symbolically. You know, think about when someone says something really profound and then they say, chew on that. Because chewing on that means to think about it, to process that information. And so you could think of it as, you know, this is a form of, you know, discernment. It's about analyzing information as it comes in. And so you're taking that information and transforming that information So think about the whole process of eating with teeth as transformation of a pure form into fragments. But then when you're speaking, it's about using the teeth. And the speech on fire is about purifying the word by getting rid of all the impurities of the outside, which, you know, like I talk about with the profane. And so this means illumination of the word, to speak the sacred into form. And also, I just want to make mention of how powerful this sheen symbol is in context to the Tetragrammaton, which is the ineffable name of God, the four-lettered name of God, which is the YHVH, pronounced Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. And I hope people are looking at the symbol, the three-pronged symbol with the three flames right next to the word Kabbalah, because this is about understanding how this is used with this Tetragrammaton. And the word ineffable, which is associated with this Tetragrammaton, means it means unspoken beyond words. It's too sacred for words. So the ineffable name of God, when you add the sheen symbol to the middle of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, the Tetragrammaton, you get YHSHVH, which means Yahshua. It's pronounced Yahshua. And Yahshua means Jesus. So think about that. Because this means that the sheen being the middle pillar in the middle of the name of God or Tetragrammaton is the manifested word. It means God incarnate, the word manifested. Think about that. The sheen is right in the middle of the word God. And so, the Tetragrammaton. And so think about that. You have Yahshua. Yahshua comes from the sheen being added to the Tetragrammaton, which is the ineffable name, which means God. So the unmanifested, unspoken word is made manifest. So Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh is the unspoken word. And Yod-Heh-Sheen-Vav-Heh is the spoken word. Jesus. Jesus is the spoken word. So God is the unspoken and Jesus is the spoken. So really think about that, because this is about how we're going to really understand our world that we live in and understand these religions and the deeper aspects of these religions through understanding symbolism, through understanding green language, through understanding the occult, through understanding this Kabbalistic tradition. With this sheen, it helps us better understand the word made manifest. Also, I'll just throw it out there that if tooth means sheen being associated with transformation, then just think about the green language of tooth. What does it phonetically allude to? What does it sound like? It sounds like tooth, 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 thoth. It even looks like thoth. And thoth is the god of magic of spiritual transformation. Because it's about going from the unmanifest to the manifest. And thoth is also the god of speech. So what are we talking about when we're talking about the tooth and teeth? We're talking about speech. It's the speech on fire. Sheen is the speech on fire. And again, you know, to chew on something means to think about something. So it's about thought or thought or thoth, foth, tooth, right? And that's the truth. Because remember, it's about understanding what the representations are, what the archetypes are. So logos is associated with truth. It's associated with absolute objective truth. And thoth is associated with objective truth. And thoth is tooth. And tooth is speech. So all of it connects. It all connects. It's all making sense. It all goes together. It's all about what I said earlier about spirit, soul, and matter. It's about the unmanifest becoming manifest. So now we're going to go to Hermeticism. Hermeticism is about understanding the function of the Logos is the divine mind being the nous, or intellect, which is the staff, which is the intermediary between God and cosmos. It is about the universal mind that gives form to matter and traces the soul through it. So the caduceus symbol that we see next to Hermeticism is the wings are the divine message or the messenger with the twin snakes spiraling around the staff. And the central staff can be looked at as the Logos, being what unites the creator and the creation. And so this means it represents what mediates between the serpents or between the opposites. And this means that the Logos is what bridges dark and light, or the microcosm and the macrocosm, or the sacred masculine and the sacred feminine energies, and you know, the list goes on. So Hermes or Mercury are the personified Logos. Even Thoth is the personified Logos. And so they are anthropomorphized messengers of the Logos. And so this means that these are the messengers or guides for the soul to lead it back to origins and pure forms. And so the caduceus symbol can be looked at as, you know, a really great representation of the Logos, especially as a messenger symbol from the highest. So now we're going to go to the runes. And the runes is also an occult tradition that does not use the word Logos. And so runes are essentially vehicles for the animating Logos, inscribing patterns of spiritual laws that shape being. Each rune is a word of wisdom, tracing the soul's spiral through light and dark, guided by the living Logos. So it's a constant refinement instrument or process, where each rune is like a part of the soul that needs to be learned in order to sharpen and deepen the understanding of the self. And it's like a symbolic mirror that reveals more about the self when the right knowledge is brought to each rune, where, you know, this is about exhausting the stone to leave no stone left unturned. So you're exhausting each rune by bringing, you know, enough knowledge to each one, to each symbol, to really start to understand the self. So in the tradition of runes, each rune expressed is really all about the logos drawing the initiate closer to the source. And that being said, you could say that each rune is the microcosmic expression of the logos, being through speech or chanting or, you know, different types of sacred sounds. And the alphabet of the runes, known as the Elder Futhark, is really, when you really look into it and really use the runes and really observe how it works, it's essentially a phonetic spell casting of manifestation, which means it's a magical symbolic way to express the forces of nature, or, you know, to align to nature. That's what the logos is all about. And the Norse god of the runes, of the tradition of runes, is Odin. And Odin represents the Most High in this tradition. And so in his speech, which is associated with the Ansus rune, and the Ansus rune, we have to understand, represents the force of divine breath, or you could say God's speech. And also, it does even represent inspiration, which is what I talked about before with the spire, the inspiration, or the inspire at Ion. So it's basically a symbol for communication of the sacred. It's an intermediary symbol. And the speech name that is associated with Odin, the speech that he gives, the name is Halvamal, which means the words of the High One, or the Most High. And I think it's really also important to understand that this Halvamal, spelled Havamai, is a seven-lettered word of speech. And this speech, Halvamal, is really important, the words of the High One, because it's dealing with the sacred. And the sacred is coming from the speech of the High One, being Odin, the Most High. And so when you think of that and you look at this rune symbol right next to the word runes that looks like a kind of like a crooked F, you have the vertical line and the two protruding lines, diagonal lines coming from the top half of that vertical line. And this represents the mouth from the Most High. The two diagonal lines represent the opened mouth of the High One, which is Odin. And this means that Odin is speaking the sacred. And so using this rune is about understanding the logos, because it's about speech of the sacred. So as you speak with the Ansus, you are speaking the sacred. That's what this represents. That's the importance of this rune symbol when understanding the concept of the logos. And there's a lot more that you could say about this rune. Obviously, you could just exhaust this forever. And that's really the importance of these stones, or these rune symbols, is understanding that each one has to have the right knowledge and enough knowledge to really unlock them, to really understand them at a very deep level. And so now we're going to go to the occult tradition of Thelema. And this is another tradition that does not use the logos, the word logos. And so Thelema, in the tradition, the holy guardian angel is the guide towards true will. To trace the holy guardian angel is the true great work, the truest expression of your innermost divine self. So the holy guardian angel is about the deep connection to the higher self, to be guided towards the true will. So this holy guardian angel is the intermediator between ego and the spirit, or the nous. So it's about what you know and what you understand and being in alignment to truth and being in alignment through, you know, your thoughts, your emotions and actions, and creating reality through the will, the true uppercase W will. Because in order to produce what we want to see in the world, we must will it into existence. And we do this through our thoughts and our emotions and our actions. And this is what will manifest the word, or the holy guardian angel. So it's about becoming conscious. And this is about, you know, the true will, the inner logos. Now, when you think of the Thelemic sigil, the symbol that's right next to the word Thelema, this is the symbol known as the unicursal hexagram. And it's unicursal because when you take a pen and you start from the point in the center of the circle and draw one line from start to finish without lifting the pen, this is about drawing out the whole hexagram in one line. So the logos is akin to the center point. And the objective is to start from the point, or from the flower, and journey out to trace all six points and back to the middle point, which is the logos. So it's about starting from not knowing what you're really part of, which is the point, the center, the flower. You're not aware of this at first. This is why you have to journey out to the six points in order to come back to the center point. So this is symbolically the focus of the will to the truth, because you can look at it as the center point is about starting in the whole, which is holy. And then it is, you could say, broken apart into these six parts, these six points, where we have to go learn about these six points in order to be able to come back to that center point. And it's the point of the word, or in Thelema, it would be the word of the eon, which is the age or a long period of time of the journey. So this hexagram symbol, it is symbolically about unifying the opposites through the journey. It's about the inner child growing up into a responsible adult, responsible to truth. And, you know, also, just keep in mind that all of these mystery traditions are all post-ancient Babylon. And this means they all come after Babylon. And that means they're all dealing with the solar cult influence, which means they're all advanced and you know, fragmented sciences that, you know, even though they're all carrying remnants of the lunar and the stellar, they're all traditions that formed under the solar cult umbrella. And they all mostly have solar dominance in their sciences as a result. And, you know, that's not to marginalize these traditions at all. I'm not speaking down on them, but it's just to make sure that we understand what we're dealing with as far as the sacred energies of the universe, because balancing the sacred feminine and the sacred masculine is really what the goal of all these traditions really is. And we have to understand that the solar dominance is a masculine imbalance, which has taken place in all of humanity collectively. It's written right in the condition of our behavior in the world. And it's written in stone as a warning sign in the pyramids of Giza, the Egyptian pyramids of Giza. So post Babylon, many mystery schools surfaced. They were influenced after this rise of Babylon, after the growth of Babylon. And because of nescience and also negligence, the solar cult science has essentially dominated most of these traditions. And again, that's not to marginalize these traditions. It's to help us understand that we need to know what we're dealing with and we need to know what we're looking out for. And that's why Freemasonry is so important to understand when it comes to the pillars, when it comes to understanding the sun and the moon and the stars. And I'm going to get more into that as we go. But now I want to just quickly talk about Mercury and Hermes, because I talked about them with Hermeticism, and it's really important with everything that I just said about post-Babylon solar cult, because Mercury is the messenger of the sun, the solar light. So Mercury is the planet Mercury, which is the messenger of the sun. Okay, so that's solar. It's advanced. And we have to understand how Mercury preserves Hermes, and Hermes preserves Thoth, which is Jehudi, and this is taking place in the solar cult. But Thoth and or Jehudi or Tot goes all the way back into the lunar. And so Mercury is preserving all of that. And Tot is preserving the science of the stellar cult. And so that means that Mercury is preserving all of that information, but Mercury became so advanced and then corrupt. Now the lunar is severed. We don't learn anything about the moon from Mercury, because Mercury is not associated with the moon, but yet we blur the lines as a messenger from the sun, the same way that we understand the messenger of Thoth from the moon. And remember what I said is that we have to understand that the light of the moon is not only the sun light, it is the stellar light. And so we can see how this has not only been neglected and corrupted, but it really causes confusion. And so I just want to make that point. But also, I also want to make mention that, you know, these other traditions that preserve the concept of the Logos, which is Gnosticism, Rosicrucianism, alchemy, tarot, theosophy, and of course, Freemasonry. And, you know, even Freemasonry, when it comes to the solar cult dominance in the occult sciences, it's a modern conventional makeup. It has aspects of solar dominance, and we have to be aware of that, okay? Especially in the lodge system, okay? But, you know, just look at the word Mason. It has the word sun in it, okay? That's really important to understand. That's another valid reason why the conventional Freemasonry gets muddied in or blurred with the solar cult. But the whole unfoldment of the mystery really is Freemasonry in its pure form, all the way back to the stellar and through all these other occult traditions. And, you know, this can be understood by understanding the VSL. Because when we're, you know, truing our work on the altar of all these traditions, we realize Freemasonry is in its pure form, which you could just say it's ancient Egyptian science, esoteric science, that we can really go all the way back. It's what allows us to go all the way back and to essentially learn the depths of all of these religions and traditions. Because again, you know, I'll keep saying Freemasonry in its truest form is the central esoteric system of all systems, of all traditions, because it is the way that we true our work. It is the way that we measure our work. It is the way that we understand how to distill from the exoteric into the esoteric. So I just really hope people are listening to what I'm saying about this concept, because when we really, really pay attention to the concept, we're really going to gather so much more from all of these religions and traditions and seeing what they're really preserving at the heart, at the core, at the center. And it is so, so powerful. It is so beautiful. Yet we have to understand that as these pure forms become very advanced, it becomes, harder to deal with. It becomes harder to be responsible for. And that's why these traditions, the way they teach them, can also corrupt them. And, you know, we have a lot of corruption going on in this world, as anyone with their eyes open can see. And so we have to pierce the veil of Babylon and go further. And that's what I'm going to do as I continue with this concept. And it's a very, very important concept to, you know, just study very deeply. And you will see for yourself the way that it opens up, the way it unfolds everything. And I'm going to get a lot further into this. I don't think I can, you know, go any further in this show. So there's a lot more to talk about. I'm going to continue with these occult traditions, especially esoteric Freemasonry with the tracing boards. And I'm going to get into classical antiquity, dealing with ancient Greece all the way into the Roman Empire and where this logos is developed and understood, and, you know, all these different philosophers and time periods really give us a deeper understanding of what this concept really is. And of course, you know, ancient Eastern religions as well. I'm going to get into those, and of course, then dive very deeply into the ancient Egyptian mythos with this concept. And then, like I said, I'm going to talk about a symbol that describes this logos. So I really hope you guys have gained a deeper understanding of this concept, and I really want to thank you for tuning in to this episode. And please make sure that if you have not really listened to the other episodes prior to this one, please do so. It will only deepen your understanding of what it is that I'm unveiling, and also it will prepare you for the next episodes to come. So if you're interested in more shows or presentations or news, please go to cubbyhole.com. And also, if you're still listening, I just want to stress that we are being greatly negatively affected by censorship and also just being shadow banned all across the whole internet. And if people really find value in this work, please download these episodes. It's very easy to do. You just hit the download button on the website right below the play button, and it will take you to another page where you just hit the little three little buttons, and it allows you to download these episodes. And please, share the links, share the episodes, get the information out there if you really care about it. And, let's really show people this information. Let's get more people on the table so we can really get this information situated in a more clear fashion and get more accuracy behind it, because it's very difficult to deal with. It's not something that one person can really do on their own, but it is something we must all those who really care, we must all get at this table and come to a deeper understanding of this information. It's a very big picture. It's a very big story. It's a very big, huge development that has to be recognized and recognized for how important it is, and really do your best to understand it by really studying this information and realizing just how important it is to know what this control structure really is, because we can't truly be free until we understand this control structure and what we're controlled by. And so, again, to anybody out there who is supporting this information, this cubbyhole information, is spreading this information out to others, I really appreciate you and all your efforts. And I'm glad that this information has hit you in a way that makes you feel obligated to do that. And I really just hope that this information reaches more great minds out there. I really just, I want to reach more people who are into the occult, who really care about freedom, essentially, and, ending this slave system. That's what it's really all about. And so, that being said, I'm your host, Nate Kapp. Thank you for listening, and keep in mind to do no harm, defend truth, and keep transcending dogma.